This is Lisa J. Murray with Rediscovery Women, and today we are having an amazing interview with two really extraordinary women. I'm Juliette Ford, also known as J. Lyric. She's an amazing up-and-coming songwriter. She's worked with many talented singers and producers, and some of her work is already starting to hit the airwaves, so really excited about that. She's got some amazing stuff. And also, Miss Susan Stackpole, she is a talented singer and songwriter in her own work, and she's also a great results coach. She does results-based life coaching, and she also does motivational speaking. So I'm extremely excited about this interview. I'm excited talking with these young ladies. Both of these extraordinary women desire to touch and inspire others to learn, to grow, and to continually reach their dreams. So hello, Juliette. Hello, Susan. How are you?
Hey. Good. How are you?
Great, great, great. I just kind of want to get started with both of you. I want you to kind of give me a little bit of background, how you got started kind of doing what you're doing. How did you get on this path? Let's start with Susan.
Well, Lisa, you know, you and I had spoken briefly about this, but I had a kind of dark period in my life where for about a period of 2 or 3 years, I had said a prayer that God would help me grow in faith and strengthen my relationship with Him, and I wasn't real specific, and I've since learned to be a lot more specific, but some challenging experiences at me that really helped me grow, and it was revealed to me that the reason that I walked through the dark is because I'm meant to be a light for others, and the only way to do that is if I know how to be a light in the dark. So in a brief nutshell, I just, you know, and more that came to me. I really prayed for anyone who might be listening who's struggling with the idea of purpose and why am I here. Ask God and get quiet and listen to your heart. And sometimes your heart's going to tell you crazy things, but it usually has the answer. And so just, you know, just pray and trust in faith that it's coming to you. So that's how I got started, so I'm happy to be the light for others.
Oh, and you know, just kind of reading some of your bio and your background, you've done so many amazing things. You've done, you know, singing, acting, modeling, performing in shows. You know, that's inspiring, you know, to a lot of women because sometimes they feel like they'd like to do those things, but they actually, you know, never get to do them. So as a results-based coach, how do you teach people, how do you coach people to actually go out there and press play, to press go and actually do the things that they want to do?
Well, one of the things that I talk to my clients about, Lisa, is that if you're fearful of something, chances are it's resonating in your heart that that's something that you really want. We don't really worry about failing or being bad or not being accepted at things we don't care about, meaning that, you know, we don't wake up in the morning and go, man, I hope I'm a really great garbage collector. I just, you know, the things that we really want to do well at. So number one, to use fear as an indicator that you're on the right path, that you care enough about it that you want to do a good job. Secondly, when you start to, and I work with people on this, to get to a place where the love and acceptance that you're seeking, and you and I talked a little bit about this, is coming from the inside rather than the outside, it changes your intention for why you're doing something. So I work with people to get very clear about that. And thirdly, to remember that fear is just an illusion, that the minute that you do that thing that you're afraid of, the fear dissipates. And so if it was really a real thing, you would still feel those same sensations. And the last thing is that fear and excitement manifest in the body exactly the same. So if you can, instead of saying I'm afraid, saying, wow, I'm really excited about that, even if you're petrified, it changes the psychology, right? It changes the psychology of it. You know, for instance, might be able to relate to this. There's different performers that they've talked to that they get real maybe nervous before they go out. And I think it was Bruce Springsteen who said, well, yes, it's fear, but he said, I just call it excitement and go with it. So it's all in the way that we frame things and the meaning that we attach. The meaning that we attach and the beliefs that we have about things are so absolutely powerful because our biggest fear with everyone is that we won't feel loved, we won't feel worthy, we won't be accepted. So when we can start to identify that and ask some questions like, well, what if, and do that. Well, what if this doesn't work, and what if this happens? Well, then you learned a great lesson. And if you don't get the thing you were going after, you're actually better off than you are now because you learned something you didn't know before.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. So, Julia, how, you know, fear, did it play a factor in, you know, you starting your songwriting, or and how did you overcome it?
Definitely. Fear did play a big factor in it. You know, I didn't have a lot of support because, you know, you can tell people you want to do a certain thing, and if it's not what they're doing or something like out of the norm, you don't get that kind of support. So I was a little scared myself because, you know, okay, you know, what if what they're thinking is right?
Yeah.
But I overcame it by just being around people who aren't scared to be who they want, you know, to be who they want to be.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Surrounding yourself with the right people is so important, with like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And, you know, to both of you, I know you both had to kind of overcome some health issues to follow your dream. You know, do you feel like that hindered you, or did it help you to kind of press that button? You know, was it a reality check? Juliet, was it a reality check for you?
It was for me. When I found out I had congestive heart failure, at first I went through a depression, you know, because I couldn't believe this was happening to me. But I was 28 at the time. And it took me out. My mom took me to a church, and they said, you don't claim your illness. You say that, you know, I just said, I don't have congestive heart failure anymore. Even though I had it, but I wasn't going to let it get me, you know.
Right.
But it changed my life, and it made me want to go after the things that I didn't have a chance to go after before because of, I don't know, maybe fear or thinking that this wasn't what I was supposed to be doing.
Did it set, like, more of a sense of urgency?
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah, because you know, this is my second chance at life. That's, the way I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes we just take our days for granted, and sometimes it'll take a little check, a little reality check to kind of, you know, make us say, oh, I shouldn't be taking these days for granted. I should be living each day to the fullest. What do you think, Susan? Is that kind of how you felt, too?
Well, at first I was really frustrated because, as I said, you know, the last 3 years especially, it was just kind of, you know, when you ask, pray to God for growth and to grow in faith and things, he likes to throw a lot of things at you, apparently, because, or at least with me, you know, he apparently thought I could handle a lot. And so the heart issue kind of was just kind of icing on the cake. It wasn't really such a delicious cake, but and I was really frustrated at first because I was like, really, something else? Oh my gosh. And so again, I asked for guidance, and there were three really powerful examples that came. One was Melody Gardeau, who was a 19-year-old girl who was injured in a car accident, and just it really, you know, she has trouble functioning, and she's a really up-and-coming great jazz performer, and she just would write these very beautiful, soulful songs, and Juliet, you might be familiar with her. And that music therapy is actually how she got started in music. So if it wouldn't have been for the accident, she would have never gotten into that. So that was really inspiring on the musical level. And then there was one day I was kind of being spoiled, and I was just being fussy, like, oh, I'm just, you know, tired and just having a bad day. And I stumbled across this interview with Nick, and I have trouble with his last name, Vujinsik, and he has no arms and no legs, and he has a little tiny foot, and he travels the world speaking to students and adults across the world, and he has this really powerful example where he stands on stage, and he shows himself falling down, and he says, you know, when you fall down, you have your arms and legs to get you back up. When I fall down, Yeah, he said, I don't have that. And they show, and I mean, it just tears me up when I think of it. If you do a Google search, his website is lifewithoutlimbs.org, and he basically has to prop himself up. And, I mean, getting back up is really involved for him. And he said, you know, if you fall down 99 times, you get up 100. He said, you only fail if you don't get back up. And I just sat there so humbled, thinking how much I had to be grateful for and how much I was focused on what I didn't have. So that really inspired me moving forward to just really, when I had a day where I was being fussy, to focus on, well, how is this a blessing in my life? And the third example was I had a friend of mine who sent me, Steve Jobs had given a commencement speech for Stanford University, and he talked about actually kind of having lost his job at Apple and having to start over. It's when he was the most creative. It's when he met his wife. He eventually started Pixar. He had all these great things that came, and then, of course, he got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And he said one of the most powerful statements he said to himself is, well, I could die today. What if I died today? What do I want today to be? And so those the combination of those three things, but most especially Nick, when I'm having a bad day, and if you see him, he is just beautiful and full, like, loving life. And I thought, wow, and here he is, you know, he could be feeling sorry for himself, but he travels the world empowering other people. So that was really what I would consider a defining moment, was the day that I saw him online.
Wow, absolutely. That's like a strong aha moment. You know, and it seems like, you know, for both of you, you know, you've had those strong moments in your life. One thing, Juliet, that I love about you is the way that you're able to create songs from just out of thin air. You know, you and I were talking earlier, and you were telling me about, you know, how you can create a song from anything. You can listen to the smallest thing and make a song. How do you do that?
It's a God's gift. I was born with it, I think. I've been writing since I was 8 years old, so it was just in me. And like I said, somebody can beat on the table and I can come up with something.
That's crazy. That's just amazing. And it's beautiful, like the words and everything. Is it, to me, it kind of seems like birth, you know, like, you know, giving birth to your baby. You know, it's just a creation.
Yes. I feel that way every time I hear someone sing one of the songs I write. You know, it's like they're giving life. Yeah. Awesome.
And I know it's really important for you to help others, you know, that want to be songwriters to kind of follow those goals. And, you know, you really strive to kind of give them the right ideas, the right directions when they're getting into the songwriting business, and, you know, kind of how to treat it as a business.
Right. You have to treat it as a business. You have to get your material copyrights. Join a BMI or ASCAP, which is a performing rights organization. You know, you get your contracts together, you know, as far as, like, if you're going to charge, you know, if you write a song for someone, you know, all those things. There's a lot of things involved with it.
Right. Where would you tell somebody to, like, get started, you know, if they wanted to kind of do their research, if they said, okay, I know that I want to be a songwriter, this is my passion, how do I put it together? How do I get it started?
Well, I do a lot of research. So what I did is I went to the libraries. I checked out books, you know, on songwriting. I went to bookstores and bought a couple of books. And a lot of them give you a whole lot of information and the websites to go to, even about copywriting and performing arts, even record labels. It gives you a lot of different, you know, avenues to where how you can go. And then, you know, like I've said, you know, you can go to, you know, if you go see a live band, you know, if you have the chance, go talk to them, ask them their experience. Because the more people you come around that do what you want to do, you'll be that much more empowered to do what you need to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's got to be motivating. Susan, like, what did you find? What was your experience like with in the songwriting arena? Did you find it was hard to break into, or, you know, how did you get started with that?
For me, it was born out of a place of just needing to say what was in my heart. You know, so for me, it was sort of having, you know, profound emotional experiences and not feeling like there was another way to express it. And it's interesting. because I found that that was kind of what resonated with people more, meaning that if I wrote something thinking, okay, I'd like to sit down and write a song today, and kind of writing from a place of like, well, what do I think would connect with people, didn't connect as well with when I had a day and I was like, wow, I just, you know, my heart just needs to say this today. So that's what I would say has been my experience.
So, like, from the business perspective, you know, you're a results-based coach. How would you teach people, you know, from the business perspective to get started? Because I think a lot of people have it in them to do. So how do they do it from the business space? How do they, you know, get in touch with the right people, you know, go about networking and making the right connections and not getting scammed, you know, or getting into something negative? How do they do that?
That's a really good question. First of all, for anyone listening, what I would say is I had an excellent voice coach who I was singing one day, and he said, Stackpole, he said, stop judging before you finish the product. And, you know, it didn't allow me to fully express myself. So I would say to just allow themselves to own their artistry, first of all, is to see themselves as an artist, because I think what happens is a lot of people go looking on the outside for validation for somebody to say, well, yes, you're an artist. So I would say own your artistry, because going into the business, that gives you a sense of pride and a sense of confidence, and you'll be less likely to sell out to the first thing that comes along. You know, secondly, you know, I did acting and modeling and things, and I know on the acting and modeling end, you have a lot of places that say, oh, well, if you come in and let us take your picture and pay us $1,000, we'll put you in our database and things like that. What I would tell people is, and this is a really challenging concept, and I'm even challenged with it sometimes, is live your life backwards, meaning that, you know, you talk to people like, for instance, Jim Carrey talked about that he would go and sit on Hollywood Hills or wherever, and he'd stare at the Hollywood sign, and he'd written out this check for himself, you know, to say, okay, you know, and he would visualize himself making it. And if somebody, you know, I asked my clients, if somebody came to you and said, this is guaranteed that you're going to be a success, that you're going to make it, how would that change the choices that you're making forward? Because I think moving forward, people are so desperate for success, they're so desperate for that first bite, that they end up selling out. So one of the Tao Te Ching, which is, I always kind of say it's kind of the Asian version of the Bible, even though it's not exactly, but it's a spiritual book kind of guide to life. And one of the things that that has worked really well for me is it says what you're seeking is also seeking you. And if you can find the peace within yourself and become solid in your core, you will actually attract things to you. And in our society, we feel like we need to go beat it down and things like that.
Yes.
If we're coming from a place
further away.
Right, exactly. Because there's resistance. So, you know, I love what Juliet's saying is, you know, there's a lot of people out there. If you're coming from a genuine place and you're, you know, very humble about your talent and things like that, there are a lot of people, I think, that are happy to take you under their wing. So I agree with what Juliet's saying is educate yourself about the business. Approach it like you would a job. Say, okay, you know, this is where I'm focused. Have a game plan. You know, just jump. You don't want to just jump into it because the entertainment business is so huge. Find their voice as an artist, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I know is that fear holds us back so often from really going after what we want to do in life. How do we overcome that fear? Julia, what do you think? How do we overcome it? How do you overcome yours?
It's just like that thing where how can you love someone else if you don't love yourself?
Yeah.
So if you got fear and you think other people, you know, if you're using them as a factor, you have to find the strength within yourself to say, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have to go in the mirror and look and say, you know, Juliet, you can do this, and you go about life doing it that way, that's the way I do it. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, Susan, what do you think? You know, how do you let go of that fear? Because it grips all of us from time to time. You know, it's something that we've all experienced. You know, how do we let go of it? How do we not live these lives? Because some people live their whole life in fear,
yeah.
and they never, you know, yeah, they never go after what it is that they really love. And you can see it. You can look in their eyes and see, you know, the loss or the pain or the something is missing. And it's usually missing because of fear. How do we overcome that fear?
Well, you know, a couple things, Lisa. I think sometimes the first thing that's involved is getting real with ourselves. Speaking for myself, I lived
yeah.
for a really long time. I lived a fear-based existence, but I didn't
yeah.
realize it because it manifested as success. I always wanted to be the best. I always wanted to be successful, and it came from not a place of excellence within myself, even though that was part of it. It was this fear of, like, not being worthy or not connecting with people or something like that. So the first thing is to get real about your motivation for wanting something and say,
mm-hmm.
like, why do we want this? Secondly, one of the things that's really helped me a lot is I have a journal where on the left side of the page, you write down what you're afraid of. You know, like
mm-hmm.
let's say I'm afraid of flying. And then on
mm-hmm.
the right side of the page, you write down what you love. And if you can connect with what you love instead of what you fear, it changes your focus. And I will say this, fear is it can really manifest in your subconscious. And the period of
yeah.
dark that I went through, every kind of major thing that I was afraid of at that time happened. You know, I lost my dad.
Yeah.
I lost my relationship. So, you know, I would say to really, if you can start to identify, because what happens is people get afraid and then they don't want to think about it. They're like, oh, I'm just
mm-hmm.
not going to think about this because it doesn't feel good. But if you can sit with it long enough to allow yourself to say, oh, I really am afraid of this, and then say, well, what would I love instead? What would I love instead? What would I love instead? Because there's power in that love, and it shifts your thinking. And if you can do it on a
mm-hmm.
conscious level, what will start to happen on a subconscious level is your thinking will start to shift. So it becomes powerful even when you're not focused on doing that. So I would just, you know, say that fear is meant to tell you that you're going in the right direction. So instead of saying, oh, I'm afraid this isn't a good feeling, like, let me get out of this, ask
yeah.
it what it's trying to tell you and allow that to come. And then, like I said, focus on what you love.
Yeah, and in other words, you know, really walk through the fear.
Right, right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't hide behind it. Right, Tony Robbins, if you go to his Unleash the Power Within event, does a fire walk. And I have
yeah.
never been
yes.
more scared of anything
yeah,
in my life. Yeah, and you know, I convinced myself I'm not going to do this. You know, we're in line to go. I thought, I'm just going to go up and see how other people are doing and cheer everyone. I'm not going to do it. And I'm in line, and, you know, he partners you up with somebody, which is very clever because it kind of gives you a buddy, whatever. And so before
mm-hmm.
I know it, my buddy just walked through the fire, and I'm standing there, and they're like, go, and I'm doing it. And I was really shocked at myself, you know, and I was like, wow. And getting to the other side felt so empowering. And it just sort of taught
mm-hmm.
me that these things
yeah.
that we're afraid of are things that we create in our head. Most of the time,
mm-hmm.
the thing that we're afraid of never pans out. You know, like, as an example.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It never pans out. It's never
right.
the worst-case scenario. Never.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And usually the
right.
things that happen in our lives are not necessarily – it's either maybe something we were afraid of, but it doesn't happen the way that we thought it would, or it's something that completely comes out of left field that we never expected. So while
right.
we're spending all this time over here worrying about something on this end, you know, and it's a shame because it keeps, you know, I always say anything that makes us think that we're less than we are, you know, I mean, as you can tell, I'm spiritually based. You know, God says in the Bible that we are built in his likeness and image. We are created in his likeness and image,
yes.
and it is my firm belief that anything that says to us we are less than that is not a voice that we should listen to because it is
right.
not of the divine. So if you have
yes.
a voice that's saying to you, you're not worthy, you're not lovable, you're not good enough, you can't do this, guess what? That you shouldn't. That voice could not be more wrong because you're beautiful
yeah.
and you're talented, and so it's your right to go after these things that you want.
To me, that voice is just fear and it's negativity and it's a lack of self esteem, and it's a lack of belief in ourselves. And that brings me to my next question. Ladies, why don't we believe in ourselves? Why don't we believe in ourselves? Juliet, what do you think? Why don't we believe in ourselves?
I don't I think because I'm more of that support. I'm one of those people that really like support. You know, I really like a support mm-hmm. system. And, you know, if the people around me tell me, oh, you're not going to make it, you're not this and you're not that, then I have to try to find a way to build myself up. And, right. you know, it's really hard sometimes. It's not a very easy thing, you know, you can try to do certain things, but it's not a very easy thing. But that's the only thing that makes me, I do have things in my head to tell me, you know, I can't do this sometimes, but,
yeah.
you know, I also have something in my head that says you can do it. So, but yeah, it's the people that are around me that kind of messes my psyche up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's true for a lot of us. You know, that's such a profound question because it's personal. It's personal to me.
Yeah.
You know, why, and I have to ask myself that sometimes, why don't I believe in myself? You know, and when you really ask yourself that question and you sit down and you think about it and you try to bring an answer to that question, you know, you may realize some really, you may dig up some hurt. You may dig up some really painful experiences and you may go back to your childhood. Where did this, you know, this belief begin? You know, what started this? What makes me not believe that I can be who I want to be, who's inside of me trying to come out? You know, and I think it's so many different reasons. You know, you may not have had that support as a child. You know, you may have had to listen to your friends laughing at you, you know, when you wanted to do something different from what they considered the norm. You know, it could be a lot of different things, but I think that we all need to really address that question of why don't we believe in ourselves, because it's only until we believe that we can do it. We have to believe it first within ourselves that we'll be able to do it. We can't, I don't care if 100 people tell you you can do it. If you don't believe that you can do it, you can't do it. You know,
right.
Susan, what do you think? That's the bottom line for me. Why don't we believe in ourselves?
You know, what a great point that you make, Lisa, because I think that's so true, too, that, you know, that 1,000 people can say, oh, I think this is really great, but until you really feel that, it's not going to resonate with you. You know, you're not even probably going to be able to receive it. You know, I think that's why a lot of times, you know, right, people have a hard time with compliments. You're like, oh, you're so, you know, beautiful or whatever. You're like, oh, no, you know, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
And you don't have to, you know, agree with them, but, you know, to be at a place to receive it. But while you were asking that question, one of the answer that came to me was, I think the bottom line is we are in a society where we're taught to put, I'd read an article a long time ago that talked about the fact that now in the 21st century we have so many people that are educated, and we have this idea of experts and consultants and things like that, that we almost have gone overboard, meaning that we're afraid to trust our own opinion. So for me, lack of self-esteem essentially is when we put more stock in somebody else's opinion of us than we put
in our own. Oh, my God. You hit the nail on the head.
How do you overcome that, Susan? How do you think, you know, people can overcome that?
I think that that's a great question. And I think that it's really an intricate thing because, as Lisa said, for every person, I think that, you know, it's like we all have our own Achilles heel, meaning we all have our own, you know, like, for instance, you know, Juliet, obviously, you know, you've made your way in the music world and you have a pretty, you know, solid base. If somebody came up to you and said, oh, you know what, you're not a good songwriter, you know, I don't like your music or whatever, it would resonate differently with you now maybe than when you were first starting, you know.
Right.
I mean, and obviously you write beautiful music, so, you know, but, I didn't want anyone listening to think that I was making some sort of, but what I'm saying is that because that's so near and dear to your heart, you know.
Absolutely.
You know,
right.
So I think it's just different. I think it's just different for the things we care the most about are the things that hurt us the most, or that we're looking for validation for.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, you hit the nail on the head right there. The things that we care about the most are the things that can hurt us the most.
Right.
But Susan, you made a really profound point right there when you said, you know, the way Juliet would perceive that now as opposed to when she was just starting out would be different.
Right.
Because
she's built
up momentum. You know, you actually earned some credibility for yourself, as opposed to when you were, it was just a thought in your head, you know, I'd like to be a professional songwriter. So I get, that makes a difference. So I think, you know, to answer my own question, why don't we believe in ourselves? I think like you were saying, Susan, it's different for every person. But I think, once again, like Juliet was saying, that it has a lot to do with self-esteem, you know, where you are with your self-esteem, where you are with your self-growth, and then that kind of comes back to what you were saying, Susan, about, you know, how you should take on your fears. And like when you were walking across that fire, how empowering it was, because you were doing this thing that you were so afraid of, and you were doing it, and you were doing it well, and you made it. I think that if we could start, you know, giving ourselves, like, tasks, you know, to do on a regular basis of little things that we're afraid of, and to eventually, you know, just increase that over time, that will empower us. You know, we may start with something really small that we're afraid of, you know, and then just like maybe afraid of a bug or something, you know, and just, you know, break down, you know, just something small, break down that fear. Or for some people that could be huge, but, you know, it depends. But just start with something small, and then just gradually over time, you know, grow that and do things that are bigger that you're afraid of. And that can really be a huge motivator, and it can teach us to trust ourselves, which can teach us to believe in ourselves. And I'm a firm believer that once you believe in yourself, the sky's the limit. Once you really, truly believe in who you are, you can do anything.
I think so, that's really beautiful, Lisa.
Thank you. So my question to you guys is, you know, how do we as women get results when it comes to, you know, manifesting the life of our dreams? I mean, we all have our dream life. We all have this life that we have that we, you know, would love to see ourselves, you know, in that life and living it and really enjoying it to the fullest. How do we get there? You know, how do we get those results that we want? How do we manifest those results in our lives? Susan, what do you think?
Well, a couple of things, Lisa, to kind of tack on to what you were just saying. One thing that I want to offer to anyone listening is that as children, you know, we come into this world, we're so full of life. We have so much love to give and things like that. And, you know, we might be in a position where our parents or our caretakers aren't ready to handle that. Or, you know, and so we're taught, you know, sit down, be quiet, eat your vegetables
right.
And things. And we're taught to kind of go against the nature of what we're feeling. And so we detach from listening to our heart. So if your heart is telling you to do something, and I'm not talking about something evil like doing drugs or something like that. I'm talking about something productive and healthy for you. Even if it sounds crazy, give yourself permission. Because I think what happens is in this world, we look to everyone else to give us permission. Well, if so-and-so says that I'm, you know, a good secretary, well, then that means I'm a good secretary, rather than owning it. And the people who have really made it happen are the ones who just kind of do it knowing in their heart. And one of the things I tell people, and I've studied success, it's very interesting to me, and they have surveys out now confirming this. It's not necessarily so much education and talent and skill set as it is passion and perseverance. And if you go through the great leaders, the people who have really created something, that it's a key that runs through all of them. So what I would say, and this was really inspiring to me, I had a chance to talk with Jonathan Cain, who is in the musical group Journey, and he's such a deep guy. And one of the things that he talked about, and I thought this was great, is he said, have a dream keeper, somebody that, you know, you can share your dream with that will keep you accountable. But one of the things he talked about is setting a vision for yourself, that as a young man, he got these music fake books, which is, you know, Juliet, you know what those are, but it's kind of, you know, it's got the chords, and it's kind of almost like a cheat sheet for music, you know. And anyway, he grew up saying, I just want to have my song in one of these books. And he set the intention for himself when he was like 10 years old or something. And, and he just held that. So I think the key to success is really what you were saying, Juliet, it comes down to this idea of we really have to believe in our own vision. We have to create a vision for ourselves that's so compelling that when we get out of bed in the morning, we don't care what anyone has to say because we know in our hearts that it's the right thing. So I think the other thing is we have to start listening to our hearts again. We have been taught, I think, through generations and generations, you know, our grandparents, you know, lived through tough times. Our ancestors lived through tough, you know, they lived through wars. They lived through the Depression, where they just kind of had to put their nose to the grindstone and do it. And we're living in a more blessed time. We have a lot more resources and things where we have the opportunity. This is what our ancestors fought for us to have the opportunities they didn't have. So I would suggest really, really start to listen to yourself and figure out what your heart wants, not for your validation, but for its fulfillment. Because I think those are two different things. And I think a lot of times we spend our whole life looking for validation. And I'll say one more thing really quickly. I remember watching Oprah Winfrey talking about accepting her Emmy Award. And she was giving a speech at a college or something, and she said, you know, my whole life I just wanted to be recognized. You know, she lost her mom at a young age. She felt this need for validation. And she said winning the Emmy was the feeling of being on top of Mount Everest by herself. She said it was great to be at the top, but it was a little lonely. And she said what I would say to all of you is enjoy the journey, because the journey is what it's about. So that's what
I think, you know, you made an incredible point right there, Susan, enjoy the journey. And so many of us, as women especially, we are enjoying the journey. And one big reason is because, number one, we're not following our dreams. Number two, we're putting ourselves last. As women, so often we end up putting ourselves last behind everybody, behind, you know, our husbands, our families, our kids, the job, you know, other family members, whatever it is, we end up putting ourselves last. So we aren't enjoying our journey, because the journey that we're taking is not ours. So the thing that we do as women as far as putting ourselves last, we have to learn how to stop doing that. We're such nurturers, we're such caretakers. We want to make sure that everything is taken care of, everybody is taken care of, everybody has everything that they need. So, you know, when it comes to us, we, you know, kind of push ourselves to the side and say, well, I'll get to me later, or I'll do that later. So, you know, our clothes may not be as nice, or our hair may not be as nice. You know, just the little things that we love to do get pushed aside. We may not get to read that book that we've been wanting to read forever. You know, we may not get to go and see that movie or go out to dinner with the girls, because we're always pushing our needs to the back to take care of everybody else. And really, we think that's the right thing to do, but really, that's not healthy. And that's why we're not enjoying the journey, because the journey is not ours. It's not based on us. And I'm not saying that to say be selfish or to do everything for yourself, but what I'm saying is that when you live a life where you're taking care of yourself just as much as you're taking care of everybody else, you're living a healthier, happier life, and you can only take care of other people really well if you're taking care of yourself really well. You know, so, you know, do you guys agree with that, that, you know, we put ourselves last?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We put everybody before ourselves, and I'm at a point where, you know, like I said, I feel like I have a second chance. You know, I want to enjoy life's little pleasures, you know, like, you know, I travel sometimes, you know, I used to didn't do that, you know.
Yeah.
I'll go out of town every once in a while, or, I mean, something as small as going to go get coffee at Starbucks. I mean, it's just sometimes you just got to get a little me time. Yeah.
You know, those simple, we think it has to be something huge all the time, but you're right, Julia. It can be something as simple as going to get coffee or going to get a manicure, you know, or just going, you know, just going window shopping. It could be something as simple as taking a bath, taking a candlelit bubble bath, you know, taking those extra 15, 20 minutes to yourself, just laying your head back and just resting, not thinking about anything. You know, but we don't do that. We put ourselves last so much. You agree with that, Susan?
I do. And when you were speaking about that, Lisa, one of the things that came to mind, and this is definitely a lesson that I learned, I won't necessarily say the hard way, but in a challenging way, that, you know, I'm one that if I can and be of help to people, like, I will do that. And I had a vocal coach of mine, a different vocal coach than the one I spoke of earlier, and she was just a she was just adorable, and, you know, she had played princesses at Disney, and, you know, she was just beautiful, and she was really kind of a mentor to me. She was kind of everything that I wanted to be, and she had said to me, she said, you have to fill your cup up first before you have anything to give to other people, because you have nothing to give. And because, you know, like I said, she was just beautiful inside and out. She was just an outstanding human being. And anyway, you know, that really, really stuck with me. And the other thing that she had said is that when she'd gone on one of her auditions, the judge said to her, you know, always trust your talent to lead you in this life, because she was really worried about getting a job and things like that. So I think that to go back to what you were saying about the nurturing, though, I think that I don't know why, you know, I was thinking about what you were saying, that as women we do that. I mean, and I'm just as guilty of it. You know, and Juliet can probably relate to this. All of a sudden when you start having issues with your health, then all of a sudden in some ways it gives you permission to take care of yourself. So for me it's made it a little bit easier, because it's like I have a reason. You know, it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, I have to take care of myself because I have health issues. But before that, maybe not so much. And it's interesting because you touched on such an important point that I know so many, you know, moms and wives and, you know, even single women I know, that we kind of just put ourselves last. We just forget about ourselves. We do everything for everyone else. And it's interesting. I mean, I definitely would be interested to hear from others, too, on, you know, maybe some people in the psychology field or something, why we're programmed that way, because it seems to be a very across the board thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it just comes from the fact that we're just natural born nurturers. We're used to taking care of everything and everybody.
Right.
But I think, guys, just, and this is just me thinking, what if as an experiment or whatever, you know, a young girl was raised, and she was raised not necessarily to take care of everybody else, but where she was nurtured to go after her dreams. She was nurtured to believe in herself. She was nurtured to set her goals and what she really loved to follow behind that. What if she was given that nurturing, you know, instead of being the one to have to give it out all of the time? What would happen? What would be different if she was filled with nurturing and empowerment and love and the, you know, the not just the ability, but also the permission, you know, from parents, mothers, fathers, everybody around her to go after her dream, so that she would think that, you know, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be following my dreams. I'm supposed to be living a life that I love and enjoy. You know, I'm supposed to be doing all of those things that make me feel good. How would that impact on her life as opposed to, you know, the other way around? I think that would be amazing.
I think that would be instilled in her, you know, and
yeah.
She would grow and she'd probably be really successful without, you know,
exactly.
Not saying without trying, but it would just be in her, you know, opposed to, you know, where I come from, it's like, you know, I have to fight to get to where she is.
Yes.
You know, I have to make myself get there.
Yes.
So it'll take me a little longer, and I think, you know, I think that may be the difference.
I think all of us, because, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we're all trying to unprogram ourselves, you know, to kind of unprogram ourselves to stop putting ourselves last and to start actually doing something for ourselves. But to think that if somebody was raised and they started off believing, hey, it's okay to do things for yourself, it's okay to live your dreams, you know, it's okay to live the life that you love. And all of the other things will come, too. You know, you can still be the nurturer and live the life that you love. You know, you can still have a family. You can still, you know, have all of those other things. You can have it all. It's not true that you can't have it all. You can have it all, you know. And I think that it would be wonderful if, you know, we taught, you know, other young girls to really love themselves and to go after their dreams, as opposed to teaching them that, you know, you're supposed to be last. You're supposed to, you know, take care of everybody else. That's your job.
I agree.
That's your lot in life, you know.
Right.
It's, you know, it's okay. It's okay to do everything, you know, in life that you love to do. And you can do that, and you can be really successful and wonderful in every area of your life. I think that if that was taught, that maybe we wouldn't find ourselves searching for this missing piece because there wouldn't be a missing piece.
Right.
Lisa, it's interesting because when you were talking about kind of giving that example about, you know, what if we did this with these girls, two examples came to my mind like lightning. And the first one was Jennifer Hudson, and the second one was Miley Cyrus. And both of them have had hardships in terms of, you know, with their career and things like that. But, you know, both of them have also been, from what I've been able to garner from interviews, in a really supportive, loving environment where they were taught to be empowered and go after your dreams. And even with Miley, my understanding was they did not book her right away for the Hannah Montana gig. They went out for a year, and they said, well, we don't know if we want you. And they auditioned people all over the United States, and they just felt like nobody kind of had her spark and her charisma, so they came back to her. But she was bummed. She didn't get the gig. And, you know, same thing with Jennifer Hudson with the, you know, American Idol. She wasn't number one.
Right.
But I think that I think that what you're talking about, I mean, I think that it does exist, but we might not have experienced it. But
I think it's common. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that those are two stellar examples when you're saying, well, I wonder what would happen. I think things like that are what happens. You know, that these are two girls who have really gone after their dreams and really have a full sense, you know, that they have a full sense of living this experience. I have a friend who's a life coach, and she never asks the question, what do you want to have? She always says, what do you want to experience today? And I said to her, I said, well, aren't you the clever little question wizard? I said, because and when you ask yourself that question, for me, I come up with a complete, if somebody says, what do you want to have, or, you know, what do you want, versus what do you want to experience, I come up with two different answers, and essentially, in some respects, it's the same question. So, you know, I think that for both those girls, I think when that happens, that they have a fuller sense of having lived their life, because I think a lot of us carry around a lot of regrets. That, oh, I wish I would have done this, or I wish I would have done that. And so I think that as an adult, we're trying to reconcile that. And, you know, it's one thing to be starting at 4, 5, 6 years old and to be nurtured and loved and have the whole world, you know, have your whole life ahead of you. But waking up one day and finding yourself in an adult body and saying, oh, okay, I need to start now, here, today. You know, we have jobs and obligations and bills and things like that. So it taxes our brain a little bit more. You know?
It makes it so much harder because, you know, we've started later. You know, we have all of these other responsibilities, but we just have to keep pressing on because it's better late than never. And I love, love, love that question, Susan, so I'm going to ask it to both of you. Juliet first, what do you want to experience?
As far as life or?
Yeah.
As kind far of as life. I want to just...
Yeah.
I just want to enjoy life. You know, I want to be there and watch my kids grow up. I want to travel. I want success. And, you know, I realize that even though I'm living my dream, I have this picture of what may happen, but I've learned in life that things don't happen exactly the way you think, you know, the way you see. You just never know. You just get there. You know, when you get there, it's like, oh, okay, this is how I got here or whatever. You know, if you think about some of the goals you set and you achieved them and you think how you got there and then you're like, oh, I didn't, you know, you'll see some little surprises on the way, you know. So I can't wait to see my little surprises and I just want to enjoy life.
What about you, Susan? What do you want to experience?
It's interesting that you would ask me that question. I feel the universe conspiring for me this week because, like I said, my coach had just kind of given that one to me within the last 2 weeks here. And the answer that comes to me whenever someone says that, because I have, you know, in my own life been challenged with the issues of confidence and other things, that the first thing that always comes to mind is that I want to see myself and have the experience of myself that God sees, like when he looks at us, because he sees us in our purest form. So essentially, I feel like that kind of branches out into all the areas of my life. But I want to experience myself and see myself as he sees me, because I do feel like there's a lot that I'm here to share. There's a lot that I'm here to give. I think there's a lot that we all have to share and we all have to give. And, you know, that I'm happy to stand as that light. But that to do that, it takes a lot of power and it takes a lot of strength. And so that's kind of where I'm coming from.
I think, and this is me personally, I think that God wants us to all experience our lives in the fullest. I feel like we all had a purpose when we came here. I feel like, and that purpose is whatever it is that motivates you and pushes you. And you know that it's something inside of you that pushes you. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you try to go the opposite way, you know, the further that you go away from it, it's going to push you. It's going to push you.
Right back.
It's that thing that really pushes you. It's that thing that when you really, you know, let go and allow it to come in, you feel such freedom. You feel such relief. You feel at ease. And I think that what God wants us to do is to fully experience life, to fully live and to experience what he's given us, to fully use the tools, the talents that are inside of us, you know, that were born with us. Because I feel like those talents and those gifts were given to us to share and to experience, not to bottle up and to keep inside of us because we're afraid or, you know, because, you know, we're unsure or because we're trying to go the safe route. So when I ask myself, Lisa, what do you want to experience? The first thing that always, always, always comes to my mind is I want to experience freedom. I mean, that's always the first word. I want to, you know how you feel when you throw your arms up in the air and you just spin around and you feel a warm summer breeze on you and you just close your eyes and, you know, you just feel amazing. I want to experience that freedom every day of my life. I want to experience beauty. I want to experience the beauty of the world, the different feelings, the luxury, the excitement, everything that's beautiful about the world. I want to experience knowledge, continual knowledge. I thirst for knowledge. I love learning new things, and I love experiencing new things. I want to experience just a continual joy and happiness, and I believe that if I experience the freedom and the beauty and the knowledge that I will manifest that continual happiness because every day of my life I will be experiencing something that I love. So that's kind of where my answer comes from. And of course, I feel like there's a means to an end and there's a way that I'm going to experience those things. But, you know, that question to me was so exciting because it got down to the core. Because you hear a lot of people say, well, I want to be successful or I want, you know, to have a certain amount of money or, you know, I want to do a certain amount of things. And really, you know, those are all accurate things, but there's something below that. You want to be successful for a reason, or you want to have a certain amount of money so you can do this, you know, or you want to do certain things so that you can feel this. So my core things are that freedom and the beauty the joy and just the happiness and excitement and the knowledge. I want to experience those things. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. I guess.
That's good.
I love knowledge. I love to learn things. And, you know, when people ask questions, I love to really go inside and internalize those questions and to really be honest with myself and really answer those questions, even if it doesn't feel good or if it doesn't feel comfortable. Because it's like you said, Susan, when you get to something that doesn't feel comfortable, you know you're kind of in the right place. You know, you're kind of, you know, going where you need to go. And I guess the last thing that I would like to ask you, ladies, is if you could give one bit of advice to women that are seeking to empower themselves and to grow, you know, within themselves and to be, you know, more self-confident, you know, what advice would you give to them? Let's start with you, Juliet. What would your advice be?
I would tell them to turn the voices, the negative voices, out of their heads, pray,
right.
Move forward.
Right.
That's simple as I can put it.
Simple, but definitely powerful. Powerful,
oh,
because, you know, negative voices can really destroy you, so. Very powerful. And the same thing to you, Susan. What bit of advice would you give women seeking empowerment and self-growth?
My dear friend, Dr. Kristen Pankhurst, has a practice called Embracing Change, and I'm going to borrow a phrase that he says all the time, which is to be gentle with yourself.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
This is essentially kind of what Juliet is saying, but I think that, Lisa, you and I were talking about this, and I'll just offer this up. I had the recent experience of talking with some gentlemen friends of mine, and one who had recently been cheated on, and one who the woman that he was in love with basically left him standing at the altar. And it was interesting to me because they didn't really, you know, as women, when, you know, a guy breaks our heart, man, we can be kind of vicious sometimes and be like, oh, he's a jerk and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, neither one of them said that. And it was an aha moment for me, meaning realizing as women, we are so much harder on ourselves than, and we project that onto the way that guys are, meaning that for guys, either they like something or they don't. Most times it's not personal. And as women, we take it personally, and we are so judgmental. We are so hard on ourselves. And I don't necessarily understand where that comes from, but when Dr., that's for me, when he says that, be gentle to yourself. That is such an empowering statement because as women, I think we very rarely are. I think that we beat ourselves up sometimes without
a Yeah, all the time. Yeah, we're our own worst critic.
Right. So I like what Juliet said as well, and I think that's so important, is only listen to the voices that are taking you where you want to go, you know, that we're created and, you know, in godlike, you know, divinity and things like that, and you know, that to walk that path. So anything that tells you that you're less than or not worthy or not good enough, that's not coming from a good place. So why listen to that voice?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, there you have it, folks. We have had an amazing conversation with two amazing women, and I want to thank you guys so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you.
This has been just a wonderful, wonderful conversation, you know, just a wonderful meeting of the minds. And before we go, I want both of you to give your contact information so people can learn more about you. You know, they can visit your MySpace pages or, you know, your different sites and just, you know, learn what's going on with you. Juliet, you want to start off?
Yes. You can reach me at www.myspace.com/jlyric. Or you can reach me on Twitter at www.twitter.com/jlyric.
And Lyric is spelled LYRIQUE.
QUE, yes.
She's got a cute little twist on it. I love that. And Susan, how can everybody get in touch with you?
Well, I have a couple different things. The most comprehensive thing is if they go to the website selfgrowth.com, and they type in my name, Susan, S-U-S-A-N, Stackpole, S-T-A-C-K-P-O-L-E. It'll take you to my page, which pretty much lists all my contact information. They can also, if they're on Facebook, they can also find me there as well. And on Twitter, I'm, twitter.com/SusanStackpole. So, and I also, if they want to tune into the radio show, I do a weekly radio show at artistfirst.com, so they can also find me on there.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you once again, ladies. It's been my pleasure, and I look forward to doing this again.
Thank you.
You're a fabulous hostess. Thank you so much for such a delightful hour. It just has been such an honor to be, you know, speaking with you and Juliet, and I know that my heart and spirit definitely are coming away uplifted, so thank you for that wonderful gift, and thank you, too, as well, Juliet.
Oh, thank you, too, Susan.
Wow. Okay.